Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome. Today we have Mike Schmidt, who is the founder of Ensemble Ventures. And we're going to talk to him today about some healthcare-related cybersecurity and privacy. And we were just talking before the intro here, and a great resource. So he has great passion. But Mike, I want to thank you for coming today.
My pleasure, Chris. Looking forward to an engaging exchange here this morning.
Okay.
You bet.
So give me the 2 minutes on your background, Mike.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of a serial junkie entrepreneur. I've spent the last 30 years doing startup companies around the world. I got my start early on. I was an EM designer for Intel in the Bay Area. I'm essentially a native of Colorado Springs. I was born here in 60, but my parents were both in the Air Force. So when he retired, we went out to California to the Silicon Valley area, and I grew up in the whole Silicon Valley startup culture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people were ramping up companies on napkins and Denny's, and you're kind of around that whole environment. So my first job was with Intel and helping lay out and design fabrication buildings for semiconductors. So I kind of got an early, you know, technology bent going on in the marketplace. But one day I went to a trade show, saw video conferencing for the first time in 1981 in San Francisco, and I literally walked into an industry that was just starting out when it was $1,000 an hour to do video conferencing. Within 3 months, I had been hired by the company I met at the trade show to come in and take on the product management for a state-of-the-art video, audio, and communications platform called Mizar. And we went on to sell this to top, you know, 50 companies in the top Fortune 50 companies in the U.S. So I spent the next probably 3 years of my early career traveling around the country meeting Fortune 50 executives. As a young, green marketing and sales guy, I kind of got my, you know, early spurs from a very talented mentor who took me under his wing, but I didn't know he was a multimillionaire when I met him the first time. But I had a chance to really dive into the industry. For the next probably 10 or 15 years, I spent in a lot of startup companies in telecom and internet, broadband, and I had my own consulting firms. I, you know, started up in the mid 80s, blew them up, had to go back to work again, took on, you know, national sales manager jobs for industrial companies, and rolled out, you know, VAR programs in the United States where we went 0 to 5 million in 12 months, stuff like that. And so about right around the early 90s, I got involved with a startup company in the UK. So I got a British government license from the DTI to test high-speed subcarrier technology in the British government or in the UK market to solve their credit card fraud problems. Now, this would have been 1991, and this is pre-internet. So, I mean, the internet was around, but it wasn't webized yet. You know, you didn't have Netscape or Mosaic browser back in the early 90s. But we solved the credit card fraud problems in the UK, helping get a company started to deliver stolen credit card data using data subcarriers on FM stations. And we brought the technology to the UK and set that up. So for about the next 5 or 10 years after that, we did some work in Hong Kong. I did some consulting work down in South Africa when apartheid broke up in 96. We were working with wireless and microwave companies that had been, you know, part of the apartheid government, and the Afrikaners that were involved in, you know, new technologies and development of new companies in South Africa. It was an amazing time to be there when, you know, all of the shackles were taken off in terms of their government. And then about first part of 2000-2001, I kind of refocused my efforts back here in Colorado Springs. I started Ensemble. I put the first company in the technology incubator back in 2001, and actually had been working with companies ever since. So, you know, I bought and sold a couple of ISPs, ramped up some wireless broadband, and had been actively involved in a number of community efforts in the TPAC, the Telecom Policy Advisory Committee. We got the first wireless here in town, downtown Colorado Springs. Had spent some some time working with the Community Advisory Committee with Pikes Peak Area County Government. So I've done a lot of kind of, you know, mini community nonprofit and, you know, volunteer work to kind of help communities along. So it, I guess, you know, at 56, I've had a pretty interesting first 30 years. I'm ready now for my next 30. And as I said, as I was going to say in the interview here, the two things that I'm focusing on now is hacking housing, because I believe we've got a really serious need for affordable housing, and I'm hacking healthcare because we have some absolutely serious needs in the healthcare space.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Okay. So, great background. Yep. So we want to know now, give us some details about what you're doing here in Colorado Springs, mm-hmm. what organizations you're right. developing, interfacing, and how that interfaces. We talk about cybersecurity and right. healthcare is your area.
Absolutely. And we do, startup company, do financings, take companies to markets with new technologies. And I actually chair the Colorado Springs Entrepreneurs Group as well. So we've been at that for about 8+ years, coming on 9, and we've got about 800 plus members locally. So we work with a lot of seed stage startup companies in the meetup group, and we actually reach out with a lot of them, get them hooked up to funding sources and plugged into technology providers. And we've developed a number of, obviously, venture development clusters like this to do that. So we've got one in SaaS Cloud, we've got one in healthcare, we've got one in alternate energy, and this is obviously one in the space for cybersecurity and this kind of the healthcare overlap in terms of IT. But this specific governing body, you know, is the one that I'll talk a little bit about today. But you would definitely want to address the overall vision.
Yeah.
But the healthcare governing board has been recently set up within the last 6 months. So with that, we've got a kind of a 7-member governing board of experts in cybersecurity and healthcare, and I'm actually ramping up a 20-member advisory board. So we're actually setting up a lot of cross-disciplinary experts in healthcare, in IT, in cyber, so that we start having, you know, fusion discussions at the base. And that was one of the goals that I had in this venture development cluster group that I started mm-hmm. with Brian Savaro from Axignus, is basically to put together this kind of interdisciplinary communications process at the grassroots and bringing those 4 bodies together. Now that's been we started that last year. We're still in the process of evolving and ramping it up. But obviously it's got a lot of potential. We've talked with, you know, local leaders about it and local organizations. And then when we met with the NCC, with Ed Anderson and Ed Rios for the National Cybersecurity Center, they were surprised that we had actually got this organization off and running with a healthcare IT and cybersecurity interface, because they hadn't spent a lot of time focusing on the healthcare space.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very, you know, good to hear, because obviously we were working in an area of need that they obviously can see us leveraging in. So that's one of the things that we'll focus on, you know, probably in the next 6 months with them, is how do we add that layer of healthcare security and for IT best practices in the healthcare space, and how does that relate to the cybersecurity center? So they've got their hands full, you know, ramping up the organization as it is. So we'll see how that all works out.
Interesting. So I'm not as familiar with the healthcare
okay.
side of things.
Sure, that's fine.
Cybersecurity and privacy mm-hmm. in a lot of different areas.
That's right.
I've done a little bit of work with some manufacturers that make healthcare hardware equipment.
Like device suppliers?
Exactly.
Healthcare devices. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
And you know, some critical devices that get plugged into the, you know, into people.
Absolutely.
Basically.
Right, right.
And
online monitoring devices, you know.
Yeah, so do you focus more on the healthcare record privacy side?
Absolutely. We are working on a number of areas to address what we believe is going to be the wholesale change out in our healthcare space. Now, depending upon how the election goes today, if we can get, you know, back to a tribal healthcare model, you know, in terms of being able to have your local physician and patients hooking up together in groups, kind of along the lines of the concierge model, concierge care. Really, it's collaborative care, what I like to call tribal healthcare. The key for healthcare information exchanges is vital to be able to interconnect people's records together with providers. But the problem has been in the past, a lot of the EMR integrations that have happened in the healthcare space have happened at the top end of the marketplace. You know, healthcare chains, hospital chains, but it hasn't filtered down into the base of the community in terms of safety net medical clinics, alternative providers. So there's a huge kind of wasteland of
you're saying only the big providers.
Yeah, because of the cost and the money to do it. And you know, one of the things that you can do is to get a chance to take a look at our healthcare workforce enablement seminar series that we put together. We just recently completed this. We started in May. We put together a series of 12 videos that we did some interviews of key healthcare provider professionals in the marketplace, covering everything from workforce retention, healthcare security, healthcare IT. So we actually developed a number of these interviews and put them together into a seminar series, and now we have it online. We just launched it last week. So I can give you a link to that if you're, you know, podcast.
Yeah, we'll put that in the write-up to the podcast.
So
that
yeah, because it covers a lot of this area in the marketing.
Is that a free online session
that
we can get to?
Absolutely, yeah. What you do is you need to register for a login because we're doing some analytic tracking. I want to find out, is this reaching into the community? Is it touching the right people from a workforce standpoint? Because we worked with the Pikes Peak Workforce Center. It was spun out of the RBA Regional Business Alliance. And again, this is why this body got together, was the same sector group that was formed years ago with the RBA. And we've been all been working kind of in the background and in the weeds here, kind of developing some of these innovative solutions. So the two projects that really spun out became notable is this governing board and advisory for healthcare IT and cyber, and then obviously the healthcare seminar series. And I'll send you the links to that because it's a really good broad spectrum overview of the healthcare marketplace, workforce needs, and so forth. And we covered, actually I did a really good series on the healthcare IT space because I did an interview with Mark Carlson, who's the Director of Business Development for Corio, which is the healthcare, you know, regional information exchange for Colorado out of Denver. And then also Jim Kalani, who's the main CTO for the Community Health Partnership here locally in Colorado Springs. And they're implementing a number of the healthcare information exchanges at the local level. And then the final one was Mike Ware, who's the CEO of the El Paso County Medical Society. And he deals with physicians groups in the marketplace. So they have a lot of reach into independent physician practices who are addressing all of these, you know, mishmash of healthcare requirements in terms of not only meeting the regulatory requirements of ACA, but also how do we, you know, what is the new direction of healthcare records look like and how are we going to get these integrated to patients? So we're all about patient management and control of their own healthcare records and coordination with their physicians and getting the middlemen out of the way. So we want to see healthcare record banking models tied to healthcare savings accounts. So when you own your full record, and that's just not just personal health records, that's also your EMRs, which are your electronic medical records that get added to and supplemented as you, you know, have lab tests and do, you know, different treatments and get different types of medications. Over time, your EMR starts to grow. But instead of this being stored off in some nefarious central database, you need to have it locally managed by you and whoever your physician groups are. And you manage that healthcare record as an asset. So it becomes a banking record. Anybody that gets
so
access to it.
You get a third party vendor that keeps the trusted holdings of your medical record.
Absolutely.
Provides it to the doctors, lets people add stuff to it.
Yes.
And you are the one that
you
ultimately
control it
controls
and you make
and
money from
it.
Because if somebody wants access to it, they pay. And then when they pay, that revenue goes into a healthcare savings account that you, the patient, use with your physician and your physician groups and your labs and everything in the local market. It's not a new idea. I mean, healthcare record banking has been around for 10 years. Healthcare savings account, probably for 20. But they've never been fully integrated at the grassroots level. We believe that the technology exists now to do that in a distributed fashion, not centralized.
So is this something where there's applications that you're actually working on?
Absolutely.
Or is this a theory?
It's not a theory. This technology has been in development for 20 years, and the last 10 years has been targeted to solve these unique requirements for HIPAA-compliant records, you know, ACA models. And so we've got a platform that we want to roll out that has the ability that apps and front ends can be built on top of it that can be adapted to different types of healthcare management requirements.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
You know, we're talking about some serious turmoil going down in the healthcare space as a result of the failure of the ACA. It's blowing up.
ACA, now explain that.
That's the Affordable Care Act. That's Obamacare. Yeah, it's obviously not politically correct to use Obamacare, but everybody uses it anyways. Mm-hmm. But ACA is blowing up, and there's going to have to be a replacement killer, and I think it's going to be tribal healthcare. You're going to get local physicians and their patients coming together as groups, mm-hmm. and they're going to start, you know, where instead of you as a physician having to have 3,000 patients in order to make a decent income and a living as a profession, and then having four or five staff members that do nothing but do compliance for insurance, you know, compliance and be able to get paid in terms of Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, it's huge amounts of money for overhead just to maintain that type of a patient flow. But you as a physician can't really normally, realistically see 3,000 patients. So if you cut mm-hmm. that down to 1,000 patients and each one of them are paying $150 a month, for their service. Now you've got a decent income, you can actually support those patients in a collaborative care model, and you don't have to have all the compliance stuff if you're going along with the insurance, you know, hayride. You mm-hmm. know, so this way you get all the administrative work out and you just now start delivering healthcare to patients that pay you directly. That's what's got to happen in healthcare. And you're going to see this all around the country, even though, you know, you have the medical exemption, where if you are part of a medical, you know, a Christian organization that provides healthcare services, that was exempted from ACA. There's a lot of examples of people even using that as a way to get this shared model happening. But you're seeing a lot of concierge care organizations pop up out of nowhere, and they're saying, you know, we're not taking Medicare, Medicaid. We're working directly with our patients. Mm-hmm. Those organizations need this extensive and expansive HIE. So that's where the market is.
So you said you see that the ACA is needs revamped, needs changed.
It does.
And there's going to be something else.
There is. There's a number of initiatives out there.
You're kind of banking your whole model on that's going to go away. How could you change and say, you know, if that doesn't go away, we'll integrate this way. If it does, we'll integrate this other way.
I think that you're still going to have people that will pull away, and they will still form these collaborative care groups, and they will pay the penalties. And yet it will be less money in the long run for them to have this care happening locally. It's tribal health care is coming back with a vengeance. And this is where, you know, people had healthcare hundreds of years ago. It was all about the local doctor solving problems for local patients. We're going back to it. But now we've got technology that allows more of these physician groups to meld together into teams and work on solving healthcare problems locally. So that infrastructure that the healthcare networks or the, you know, the hospital chains have put together doesn't become as a requirement anymore, because you've got these small tribal, you know, healthcare collaborative networks being put together that should come in and fill up the gap. Believe me, I'm not a guru on, you know, one way or the other. I see a methodology that looks like it's got huge potential, needs to be tested and tried, and why not, right? So it's in, you know, in my 30 30-year career in doing startup companies, I am always looking at ways of solving problems and dealing with systemic or systems-based concepts that have lots of moving parts initially when you look at them, but all you gotta do is break them down into their small constituents, pieces, and component parts, and when you fit them all together, you actually get a resilient system in the long run. If you spend the time, you know, to study it and work on the strategies and get the right people and capital together, there's nothing you can't solve. But this top-down, one-size-fits-all, let's-run-it-from-Washington model ain't happening.
So you're talking about the healthcare top-down
model? Yeah, it's an absolute broken model. Have you ever heard of the term hybrid clouds?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I've been in the internet space for well over 25 years. I owned and operated a couple of ISPs, internet service providers. I had a ATM fiber ISP out in California on a big fiber network, and we were doing, you know, intranets, extranets on fiber, and, you know, crossing over LATA boundaries. We were doing a lot of pioneering work in the mid-90s. So when the internet really got started, I was right in the middle of it with hosting platforms and email and software. And so as the internet grew over time, you know, we obviously got involved in different aspects of broadband and wireless. So we bought and acquired some ISPs and did some new deployments in terms of distributed broadband. But over that time span, what I saw happen was this evolution of the ASP, application service provider, you know, and evolve into this whole thing. Oh, it's all cloud computing. Well, guys, it's really the same thing. It's a bunch of servers, you know, in a network that you access over the internet. And now this cloud model has been wrapped around it as kind of a marketing model. But essentially, this idea of having your servers in a cloud and accessing a SaaS, software as a solution based model, has really become ubiquitous. It's really just gained a tremendous amount of headway and momentum in the marketplace. And lots of people are doing SaaS delivered solutions. But that what a lot of people don't understand is that you can create an area of hybrid cloud. So that means that you can not only have a localized storage architecture, NAS storage or local, on your own local LAN, but you can integrate that local storage with a cloud-based service provider and have seamless, you know, almost like a transparent model between the two. I can store data in the local database. I can access the one in the cloud. I can do it reverse, vice versa. I can access other cloud subnets in other locations around the country or around the world. So the idea there is that you basically can access this information pretty much anywhere around the world. So what I looked at for hybrid cloud model for this healthcare record management, what we call HIEs, healthcare information exchanges, if you get them down at the grassroots level, mm-hmm. you need to manage this data from local depositories. And this is one of the things that I really like about what Jim Kalani's doing at Community Health Partnership, is he's developing not only a local data store for all the collaborative information that's being shared between providers and patients, it also has the ability to upgrade and upload and be accessible at the Curio stack, which mm-hmm. is the healthcare exchange at the state level. So he gets it. He understands why that's so important. But patients need to really glom onto and control their data locally. And this goes beyond just your healthcare records. I mean, I've looked at opportunities in the marketplace where you can have a gene test done. 9 genes in a DNA sequence will give you a complete map of your susceptibility to drugs. And it's almost like a street light, you know, green, yellow, red. Mm-hmm. This 9 gene test gives you a complete DNA sequencing of your, you know, DNA and your metabolism and how you process certain types of components, drugs, you know, different types of antihistamines, different types of, you know, they got all these different kinds of drugs that you could take for anxiety and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
This 9 gene test, it costs about $1,000. You get a complete report back that says exactly which drugs you're going to be allergic to. One, if you're in the green column, you're good. If you're yellow, they're susceptible. You might have another interdiction problem with another drug that you may be taking. Watch out for this. And then a red column that says absolutely stay away from these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can produce that for your physician and say, I'm a totally involved and informed healthcare, you know, individual. I know exactly because I spent the money to do this. It's in my healthcare record. If you'd like to access it, pay me. Okay, because I'm going to get some of my money back after doing these tests and evaluation. Same thing for fitness and wellness
about
data.
That paying thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that there's a market now for individuals to sell statistical data.
Absolutely.
To large groups of companies to say, hey, here's something.
Well, this is the healthcare record banking model that was envisioned 10 years ago. I mean, in 07, 08, I put together a proposal with another medical doctor to the University of North Carolina to go after Peers for Progress diabetes research program, where we were going to take vital sign monitoring off Windows phones, because back in 07, 08, there wasn't, you know, the iPhone had just was now getting ready to come in the marketplace. So you only had Windows phones. And we were going to do a vital sign monitoring solution on Windows phones, develop a record management, and then a peer communications process. They loved our proposal. They thought it was way out ahead of everybody else. Out of 100 people, we got down to the last cut with three vendors.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we didn't get the grant, it was $1 million grant. We didn't have enough patient population to test against. So my doctors and my alliances on the East and West Coast, we didn't have enough patients that were going to be involved in the test. But we were unequivocally told us, you guys had the best technical solution of anything we've ever seen.
So yeah. Have you gone and pitched that to investors?
Well, we have.
Startup funding?
Well, we have. Even 10 years ago when you were looking at, you know, kind of the early stages of the development of the healthcare records models and exchanges and so forth, it was too early. And again, 08, 09, you had a huge downturn, so it was absolutely the worst time to do that. So I had to shelve it. We shelved the idea. But coming back to this idea of, and you asked the question about, would it be possible for me as an individual to market and anonymize my data? Absolutely. One of the things that we looked at early on was there's a thing called PBRNs, pharmacy-based research networks. They love to get anonymized historical healthcare data because they got to put it in their trial reports and their research reports and their testing. So one of the things that we felt was if we can get a large number of healthcare records under, you know, a distributed management model, then we have an aggregation opportunity of bringing those records together and presenting them to these PBRNs and these research or pharmaceutical companies and say, here it is, but you're paying for it. And when you pay for that, then we redistribute a percentage or a pro rata to all of those members that contributed their records, and that money goes right into their healthcare savings accounts. Mm-hmm. And then from there, they make the determination of what they want to spend it on. So we think over time, yes, you can earn some levels of income from your healthcare record, but the discipline needs to be that the people that want to get actually a record, they need to pay for it. And you need to directly benefit because it's your stuff, it's your information. You're going through all the gymnastics to get all this done, whether it's, you know, having lab tests done or having medical treatments or getting, you know, drugs prescribed for ailments or issues that you have. You're going through all this process. Why are you not benefiting from that? So I love this healthcare record banking model. When we saw it 10 years ago, we felt there was a place for it in the healthcare stack, but nobody's really developed and rolled out a program that makes that viable. We know that the talk on the street is obviously that if the replacement to ACA comes, healthcare savings accounts is going to play a big role in that. So all we're going to do is match the two together. And we can see that as a viable opportunity. But the real benefit, and you asked this thing about the secure aspects of the healthcare records, you have to be able to meet not only all the HIPAA requirements, but even the third-party accessibility information when family members get involved in what we call these community care networks or collaborative care networks. I mean, your immediate family is really should be a part of that stack of available users of your information, but you've got to secure that. You got to secure their access to it and what they do with it, you know, post receipt. They might get something of personal information on you and you don't want them to pass it on to somebody else. So tracking, auditing, access control logic, all that stuff has to be built into the architecture you're working with. And we've looked at probably 5 or 6 different, you know, SaaS platforms and, you know, cloud-based, hybrid cloud-based that allows you to have local storage as well as a national footprint. And so we've kind of evaluated a number of the technologies out there. And we've settled on a few that we think will get the job done. And now what we're trying to do is, you know, get some initial test beds in place where we can try this out. So Colorado Springs, is a very innovative healthcare IT space. And CHP, with the work that Jim Kalani's doing there, is really exciting. And in the healthcare workforce seminar series that we put together, we covered a lot of that. So we covered from the career stack down, all the way down into the local level. So you'll get a real good broad perspective about where the market is, where the needs are, where the workforce requirements are. But we do see Colorado Springs actually doing some very good pioneering work in this space, tied into Carrillo at the top of the stack. So
how far out is this model we're talking about here? Where
it's within 24 to 36 months, you could have regions of the country exploiting this dynamic collaborative care HIE model without a doubt. I mean, it might even be faster than that. The issue is the take up in the local community. So you have to have, you know, local healthcare organizations, safety and medical clinics, alternative providers, you know, independent physician association groups. They've all got to buy in, or at least attempt to, you know, move some of their work into these other areas. And we know that, you know, there's a lot of momentum with existing kind of top-down HIEs that have been driven and politically positioned into the marketplace, that there's a lot of momentum behind those that may be difficult to push aside. But one of the benefits of some of the models that we looked at are the architectures that leverage application programming interfaces, or APIs. So you can write APIs to actually talk and communicate with other HIEs and bring information into front ends that are secure for the user. But once you're done with that session, that information can go right back out to that depository and meet the requirements of that other HIE. So cross-platform HIE communications is vital to make this model work, because you're never going to get everything into one place at one time. This has been the fallacy of this administration driving, you know, subsidies and incentives into the healthcare space for EMR implementation. It was all a top-down play. Physicians were going to get all this money for the EMRs, and probably, you know, 50 to 60% of the efforts that were done to do this failed. They failed on the ground because they didn't look at the needs of the physicians up front. They were shoving down, you know, standard version EMR solutions into the marketplace, and the adoption rate was pitiful. We covered some of this in our seminar not only with Mark Carlson, but with Jim Kalani. We talked about this implementation, and then what was really good about the session, I brought all three of them together into a panel, and we covered some really key topics in healthcare. The first time that those three guys have ever been brought together. So you get to see everything from the state level HIE all the way down to the physicians group operating locally. So it was a good review of what, you know, the pros and cons of the efforts, you know, MACRA, the Accountable Care Act, the requirements for medical adoption rates in the physicians groups. So there's a lot of really good data sets, and part of the benefit of the microsite that we put together, we're going to shove a whole bunch of collaterals up there, research reports, stats, you know, so people can really get immersed more into the content information and not just watch a, you know, 20-minute video. There's a lot more data that we want to supply for people to really fully understand what's going on. I'm a big fan of diving into the details. Don't just give me bullet points. You know, I've done and looked at a lot of 5-minute, you know, elevator pitches for companies doing startups, and I'm amazed at people who think they can get by with some skimpy bullets and, you know, hey, I'm going to present my whole idea in 5 slides. I'm not buying it. I'm a detail guy. I want to get down into the weeds. I want to find out if you really know your market, you know your competition, and you know what this business is all about. And healthcare, and this whole issue for HIEs, it's all details. It's the devil's in the details. So.
Yep. So if I'm the average person and I want to say, wow, I want to start looking into this, how do I get involved? What am I looking for? How far down the road can I expect to see something? How do I get involved with your group? What can I do?
Okay. Obviously, from the Colorado Springs Entrepreneurs Group, that's easy. You can hit us at colospringsbiz.org, and that's our main website. We're on Meetup, so if you do a search for Colorado Springs Entrepreneurs Group, Ensemble Ventures and EnsembleVenturesInc.com is our website. So if people are interested in what we're doing in terms of reaching out and doing biz dev or cap formation, that's another place. We have the ConnectCore.org, which is a community online resource exchange that we've developed locally that we're hosting and putting on a lot of these, you know, kind of pioneering projects. And for example, you can register for the healthcare enablement seminar series on that site. So you just you can hit that page and basically log in and go to the healthcare seminar series and register for a link, and you're right in. And you know, we took on for example on that site, you remember the Dream City 2020 effort back five, or this would have been, man, it would have been 10 years ago, 07, 08, 09. Yeah,
this, I wasn't involved with
yeah,
that.
This was a community effort of 300 volunteers that reached out and communicated with 3,000 citizens, and all of their conversations and communications were put together into a database. So we have what the citizenry 10 years ago thought Colorado Springs needed to do for 2020. We archived that entire site, and we have it on connectcore.org. So what we're doing is essentially a lot of community development type work. Mm-hmm. But again, even though I do business development in, you know, tiny houses, I'm part of the Tiny House Association, or Tiny Home Industry Association, we're also looking at healthcare issues. We're trying to crack the code of this healthcare exchange.
You got your fingers into a lot.
I boil it down to two things. I'm going to spend the next 10 years of my life hacking housing, and I'm going to hack healthcare. So take the two biggest, you know, challenges facing society. Can I make money in both these spaces? Absolutely. So.
Well, definitely a pleasure meeting you. I can hear the passion in everything you do. You're really excited about it.
My pleasure, Chris. No, I enjoyed it.
And, you know, thanks for joining today. I think that there's definitely some legs to healthcare and in cyber.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.